The unsurpassed, penetrating, and perfect truth is seldom met with, even in 100,000 myriad kalpas. Now we can see and hear it, we can remember and accept it. I vow to make the Buddha's truth one with myself. So it's very, very nice to see you all. It took me a little longer to prepare this than I thought. I used to have this thing that would happen when I was the cook where, you know, you thought it would be a really easy meal and you were all prepared, and then it kind of got you. Turned out to be very difficult. So it wasn't quite what happened this morning, but it took me a lot longer than I thought. So what did I wanted to do today, because we had a meditation Sunday, and in fact, tomorrow we start a meditation retreat for 5 days, in which, of course, we do a lot of meditation, was to give you a few of my reflections on meditation and practice. There are three of them, and they're pretty simple. I won't distinguish between meditation and practice because I don't distinguish. they're married totally. And just in brief, these three reflections are about the unconditionality of meditation and practice. Okay? So talking about meditation and practice that we don't put conditions on, another way to say it. The second one is about the vigor and diligence that we need to bring to meditation and practice. And the last of reflections will be about the mind of meditation and practice. A number of years ago, I heard this quite interesting and slightly humorous story of a monk in Thailand who I think, you know, was a very good meditator, and had heard about this island where you could take a boat out to, and there was a cave, and you could meditate. And it was supposed to be this really great place to meditate. It's quiet. There's just something about it. There's a quality about it. And they thought, great, you know, I want to go there. I want to go to this place. I'm going to have a great experience. So they went there. They took the boat out. They got dropped off on this island. I think the cave was pretty easy to find. They found the cave. And they sat down to meditate. Well, it was December. Okay. And very shortly after they sat down to meditate, they heard the music of Rudolph the Red-Nosed Reindeer playing from on land. This really kind of scratchy and broken amplification system. And it was played over and over and over and over again. And of course, this person who had come to this really ideal place to meditate got annoyed, got upset, got angry, because this didn't stop. And there was nowhere they could go. They couldn't get off this island till the morning. So there they were. They were stuck with this. Okay. And as I say, they went from, you know, frustration to rage. because there was nowhere to go, they stayed there. And they kind of continued on in their meditation. Somewhere along the line, they began to listen to the words of Rudolph the Red-Nosed Reindeer. And they became very sympathetic with Rudolph. You know, this poor reindeer who had shiny nose and was made fun of by everybody. and they became very sympathetic with Rudolph. And actually, I think they began to cry, thinking of the plight of Rudolph. And then, of course, Rudolph the Red-Nosed Reindeer, as we know very well, has a nice ending. You know, he leads all the reindeers and Santa on that sleigh and saves the day. And with that, you know, they thought it was really great, you know. They became totally sympathetic with Rudolph. And the playing of this music no longer bothered them. And they just listened and appreciated Rudolph. Well, shortly after that, the music stopped. And it didn't start again. And it was quiet for the rest of the night. And they sat there and they had a quiet meditation for the rest of the night. So it's a humorous story. And I think it's a true story. But isn't it kind of like us in meditation and practice where there's these obstacles that seem, you know, just when we sit down. Recently I was at a place and the person next to me in meditation was a very loud breather. And of course I don't hear my own breathing when I meditate, so I don't really know that I'm loud or not, but I could hear this other person, and I thought, you know, it'd be nice if they didn't breathe so loud. So I could meditate. And, you know, they were just doing what they were doing. And I noticed that every time I kind of indulged that mind that was frustrated by the breathing and saw, you know, this noise as an obstacle, I wasn't very peaceful. But if I just let it go, you know, it would just appear and disappear, and it was okay. And, you know, I even tried to sit in a different place. But actually, then somebody put my cushion back where this other person was when I got up. So there I was, you know. And again, I can't hear myself. You know, we don't see ourselves, so we don't know about ourselves. But okay. So I guess the story here is the storyline here is that we really don't need the ideal conditions to be able to meditate and practice. In fact, I don't think we're going to find them. You know, we can find better conditions than others. That's okay. You know, sometimes. But ideal conditions, because they're mostly in the mind of what these ideal conditions are. They're mostly in the mind. And above all, you still have the mind. The conditions can be ideal, but the mind's there. You know, and it just has chronic noise and problems that it presents us with. Okay. I think also, to me, the time for practice and meditation is right now. It's not off anywhere. It's not when some conditions arise so that I can do it and do it well and be successful. But it's actually right now in the conditions that we are in. And if they're good conditions, wonderful. If they're awkward or difficult, they're just awkward and difficult. We can still meditate and practice. I really believe that formal meditation is essential. I mean, I wouldn't be a Buddhist monk living at Shasta Abbey practicing serene reflection meditation if I didn't believe that. For me, it's essential. But there's a lot more. Okay. It's the bringing it out into our everyday life that is equally as important. My teacher used to say that if you take time to meditate, there'll be plenty of time to do all the things that you feel are necessary to do, or necessary and good to do, all the things that are good and necessary to do. If you don't take time to meditate, there's never enough time. This paradox, or whatever we might call it, is the way I found things to be. If I take that time to meditate, there's enough time. If I don't, then I'm running around, tossed about by conditions and circumstances, and just enmeshed in suffering. Some people have a natural proclivity for sitting meditation. You know, they sit down, the posture comes to them, just have that kind of mind that can settle into it. I admire them. I don't actually put myself in that category. But it's just wonderful. Some of us don't find seated meditation to be easy. Either we find we have such an extremely active mind that it's just, you know, it's just racing all the time. There's stuff there all the time. Or maybe, you know, with our bodies we find the postures difficult. You know, we're fortunate we have a number of postures that we can sit in, but you know, and especially when you sit a long meditation retreat, no matter what posture you sit in, it's difficult. But for some of us, it's difficult with the body. Some it's difficult with the mind. Some it's difficult with both. Some of us find in activity, we find our stride in meditation. My teacher, who I think was a great meditator, was actually extremely active. You know, that was the form that she often meditated in. She said, in fact, you needed to be able to learn how to meditate on the run. She meant by that in inactivity, in the activities of everyday life. So I don't think that either of these is necessarily the mark of a great meditator. It's just simply how we are, and it's the conditions that we have. Okay? And yes, we can improve our informal meditation. The mind quiets after time, or the activity of the mind doesn't bother us so much. Okay, we're not pushed down by it. Okay? But whether we're a good seated meditator or someone who finds that they can bring it out into practice in their everyday life and activity and finds working meditation to be their stride, both of those are good meditation as far as I'm concerned. Okay. The Venerable Ajahn Chah said, people think that meditation means to sit in some special way. But in actual fact, standing, sitting, walking, and reclining are all vehicles for meditation practice. You can practice at all times. Samadhi literally means the firmly established mind. To develop samadhi, you don't have to go bottling up the mind. Some people try to get peaceful by sitting quietly and having nothing disturb them at all. But that's just like being dead. He's pretty frank. The practice of samadhi is for developing wisdom and understanding. And I would add, the practice of samadhi is for bringing it out into our everyday life. The place for the development and putting into practice of wisdom is always right in front of us in the conditions we are presented with. It's not off somewhere. It's right there, right in front of us. Again, I feel it's essential to take time for seated meditation with consistency and regularity. Okay, not spotty meditation practice, at least for me. What works is consistency and regularity. The practice and the benefits will only take root and sprout if we do it. If we do it with consistency and regularity. What I am saying is don't be discouraged if you find formal meditation difficult. And above all, whether you find it easy or difficult, bring out the practice into your everyday life. Because meditation is really about how we are as human beings. If we're a great formal meditator, and yet we're judgmental, unkind, rude to other people, I'd ask the question, are we actually meditating? Are simply advancing to a state where you cut off life and really not face it. Because life is not neat and all packaged up. It's difficult, it's easy, it's challenging, goes smoothly. It's up and down. Proper meditation should lead you to harmony and the practice of equanimity with the human race, and wisdom devoid of compassion is not true wisdom of the heart. It's just stuff. Meditation properly practiced should be fully in tune with the precepts. So that's a good sign. If you're meditating properly, you're practicing the precepts. Don't judge it by the noise in your mind or the blank spaces in your mind. Are you keeping the precepts? So my next reflection is about vigor and diligence in our meditation and practice. The Buddha said that through effort, vigilance, restraint, and self-control, the wise person can become an island. No flood will overwhelm. So meditation and practice is not always an easy path. And without vigor and diligence in our practice, obstacles can seem to overwhelm us. Okay? No one can give you vigor. You can't go to a book or a teacher or to a store, you know, some Dharma store, and purchase vigor. You yourself have to cultivate it, practice it, and maintain it. And vigor is, in essence, believing in yourself. Believing in yourself in the sense that you have the ability to meditate and practice. And our determination and intentions have to be solid and strong in this belief. Okay? Again, no one's going to do that for you. I mean, it's nice when people have confidence in us. But we got to do it. And although our bodies may sometimes be tired and hurting, our mind is actually free from weariness. Okay, this is, I'm talking about the Buddha mind here, not the chattery mind. It's very tiring. But the Buddha mind is actually free from weariness. There's a story of the Buddha in a previous life. He was the leader of some merchants. And they were headed off somewhere, and they went into this very precipitous and difficult place. And at one point, they ran across this ghost being. Okay, something was blocking their way. So the leader of the merchants first struck it with its right hand, and it stuck to the thing. And then he hit it with his left hand, and it stuck with the thing. And then he hit it with his right foot, and then his left foot. And all these things were just sticking to this being. It wasn't doing any good. And then he hit it with his head. And that didn't do any good either. Okay. So the ghost, this being, asked this leader of the merchants, now that you are in this fix, what do you propose next? Has your mind given up or not? So the merchant leader replied, although I continue to be bound in these five ways, my mind will never be forced by you to cease its determination. I will use the power of vigor to carry on the fight with you. I'm determined not to retreat. So the ghost was actually very delighted by this and thought, what guts this person has. He's not going to give up. And he told the merchant, your power of vigor is immense. You are someone who definitely will not give up. I'll turn you loose and allow you to leave. So it disappeared. So this is a story about the Buddha's past life. It may have happened or not, but I think at the very least, it's a really good analogy of the practice of vigor in our training, and how if we will not give up, we will succeed. And I think I really see the ghost in this story as a bodhisattva who's actually trying to point the person to that fact. Okay. So we have to have faith that we can overcome hardship and difficulties that arise, and we have to translate that faith into action that will aid us in that pursuit. If we do this, we'll succeed in meditation and practice. It's as simple as that. Okay? For quite a while, I was waiting for enlightenment to happen to me. I was suffering immensely, and I just thought, oh, well, there'll be this time when I'm enlightened. Well, it didn't happen, you know. So after years of being like a dog chasing its tail, you know, around and around and around, I got tired. And actually what it led me to do was to stop and reflect on what I was doing. And I asked myself the question, why was I practicing? Well, when I looked at it, I knew I was practicing because this is what I wanted to do. I knew that it was the answer to suffering. Okay? And also actually believed that I could do it. I just was chasing my tail for quite a while. Also, I reflected that, well, where was it? You know, where was this practice that I needed to do? And I knew that it was right in front of me. It's evident, it's right in front of my nose. Okay. Also came to the brilliant conclusion, for me, that I could get up one more time than I could fall. Okay. I can't stay down. That was my... that was my technique in athletics. It wasn't very brilliant, but, you know, I could do that. Okay, and it had its limited success there, but I think in training, it's really true. You know, we have the karmic consequences of what we can do, but we can do something about that karma. We can stand up straight in it. We can see what it is we have done, and we can correct that. I don't think that meditation and practice are for special people. Okay? There's like these special people out there that are... I mean, look around the room. We're just ordinary people. Okay? Look at the monastic community. We're just ordinary people. What I think meditation and practice are for is for people who want to put an end to suffering. That's who it's for. If we schlep around, if I'm saying that word correctly, if we drag ourselves around, if we feel sorry for ourselves because we carry such a heavy burden, we won't make an end to suffering. We're just mired in suffering. It's very, very heavy. You know, this analogy of a person carrying around this heavy sack. It's really heavy, and it's, you know, it's kind of bending their posture and causing difficulties, and people are telling them, you're carrying this heavy sack, but they can't see it. Okay? And then one day we put it down for a moment, and when we put it down, we realize that was really heavy. You know, that really burdens us. And we don't need to pick it up. And if we pick it up, we have that memory of having let it go. So this is what happens with meditation and practice. That memory kicks in. There is a place of peace. There is a place of freedom from suffering. So I don't think meditation is for special people. And I don't think it's about just the strong people. See, it doesn't matter if you're well or sick or if you're dying. The opportunities to meditate are, in fact, right in front of us, in things as they are, not in some special place or special time. If you determine to practice unconditionally, you'll get the help that you need. Okay? If in your seeming conditions you just see constant barriers to practice, you will not be able to see the help that you need. This vigor, which I'm talking about, is not about dashing around with macho energy. I tried it, okay? I was a very determined, when I was a football player, I was very determined, and I had this quality of putting my head down and, you know, running into people. And it was really praised, but the problem was when I got to college football and the people that I were running into were 40 more pounds than I was, I just bounced off, you know. And it was really funny, you know. And I'm still praised for it, but, you know, it was like I could have just, there were techniques to move people out of the way who were bigger than you, but I was really fixed on this, ramming into them with my head, and I just got a headache, that was all. Okay, I don't think that vigor is about leaping tall buildings in a single bound. And what was the other part of that about being able to stop a locomotive? You know, the super person thing. Rather, I think that vigor is soft and gentle, and it moves like water with the obstructions. It just moves like water can move with obstructions. And water has this quality of wearing things away. It's incredible. We did a lot of rock work at our hermitage last year, and when you began to look at these rocks and the beauty of these rocks that had been worn away by years of this flowing water, it's really an interesting thing to see, and I found it actually a really helpful thing in terms of practice. Okay, when Reverend Master was in Japan, I think one of the monks was trying to instruct her about the mind of meditation, about what qualities it had. And I don't think he spoke a lot of English. But what they came up with, what they both could really see was a good word, was the bright mind. And it's kind of the analogy of the light bulb, you know, that bright mind. When I was in Japan a number of years ago with Reverend Master Echo, we visited Sojiji, the big training monastery where Reverend Master had trained. And for some reason, we kept going from room to room and found ourselves a lot of times in these rooms alone, waiting for people, for something to happen. But what would happen with some frequency was that this monk would show up who had been one of Koho Zenji's assistants with Reverend Master way back when. I think his name was Akabe Roshi. Didn't speak any English. But when he came into the room, it was like a light bulb going off. There was just something about him. You know, he was light and airy, and it was just this wonderful quality. So I think it's important to watch the mind for the excuses of why we can't practice and meditate. They're really funny, quite frankly, some of the time, the things that the mind comes up with. Just watch your mind for the obstructions. It's giving you this key, and they're quite humorous. I mean, that's the way I've tried to bear them and work with them, because that way I can get something in there to do something about them. They're not in this adversarial position. Okay, it's just these qualities arising, and okay, you know, that's arising. But really, does it have any solid basis? Or is it just the stuff? And often I find that it's just the mind. It's just the mind coming up with something again. And that if I let go of it and cultivate the things that will help, which are meditation and the practice of the precepts in your everyday life, that I'm much better off. And that the obstacles, they change, they dissolve. They may appear again, but they're not this solid mass that we're stuck with, you know, forever, and how awful, and I'm in this awful person, and I won't be able to do it, and that other person over there, you know, they got all these advantages. Well, just talk to that other person, really. They probably don't have all these advantages. They probably had many, many difficulties. I saw that with my teacher. It wasn't all roses. There are many difficulties and seeming obstructions if she were to view them in that way. Okay. So the last reflection I have here is about the mind or the heart of meditation. And I just touched upon this concept with talking about the bright mind, the vigorous mind. Really, we're not in need of a brain transplant, a mind transplant. You know, we've got the mind we've got. But if you can just inject a bit of humor there in there with it, not see it as so heavy and awful and as this big obstacle. Because if we remove the layers, okay, if we remove the layers, there's something quite beautiful there. You know, in our tradition, we call this Buddha nature, and in fact, we say we always were Buddha. Okay? Great Master Dogen, one of our great ancestors, said that we are Buddha nature. He didn't say we have Buddha nature. He said, actually, we are Buddha nature. So that's pretty direct. It should instill confidence in you, if you reflect on it properly. Remember, Master Yu Yu said that although we are not Buddha, okay, there is nothing in us that is not of this Buddha nature. Okay, I think she was saying that we are not Buddha, so we don't walk around thinking, I'm Buddha, because that's not the thing that we're talking about when we're saying we always were Buddha, or that we are Buddha nature. We are as we act and as we are. That's how we are. That's what we bring to the world. I think that the mind of meditation is the mind that is at peace without clinging to having to be in a peaceful state. Okay? It's the mind that's at peace with whatever is there. It's the mind that we have. It's the mind that is determined to practice and put suffering down no matter how long it takes. Okay, so that was really important for me to realize, what am I waiting for? You know, and also, it doesn't matter how long it takes. Just practice. Just meditate. Just make it your life. If you study yourself in your everyday life, you'll get really direct keys to what to liberation that is right in front of you. Okay? We're just seeing it all the time. Okay? But we got to really see it. I just again emphasize, don't wait for a special opportunity. Don't wait for your transplant. I don't think it's going to happen in our lifetime. And her Master Yu used to say, when she would hear some of the things that, the increasing amount of things that we were able to do through science and our great knowledge, she would say, I'll be dead soon. Kind of reflecting, I don't really want to be around for some of that. But mind transplants, no. Okay. So take the opportunities to practice in all postures, sitting, standing, walking, and lying down. Remember, the signs of enlightenment are not big, flashy duds. You know, it's not about wearing fancy robes and halos and everybody, you know, getting down on their knees when they see you. Actually, the signs of meditation in our practice of serene reflection that great Master Dogen talks about, which, and this is actually a teaching from the Buddha, the signs of enlightenment, of meditation practice properly, are charity, tenderness, benevolence, sympathy. And when you really look at those things, the only reason you can't practice them is because you choose not to practice them. I mean, what's the obstacle in practicing those in your everyday life? I truly believe that freedom from suffering is attainable, and that the mind can come to a place of peace. This peace is both still and moving. Our Master Ji used to talk about stillness and activity, activity and stillness. Okay? So that's what this peace quality is of the mind. Ajahn Chah had a really wonderful saying. He said, if your mind is peaceful, it will be just like still flowing water. And he said, have you ever seen still flowing water? Just that, you know, just still flowing water. And I think actually we've seen it. Okay, if we go to a creek or a river, we've seen still flowing water. So he says, you've seen flowing water and still water, but maybe never still flowing water. Right there, right where your thinking cannot take you, right in peacefulness, you can develop wisdom. Your mind will be like flowing water, and yet it's still. Still and yet flowing. So I call it still flowing water. And I think that's the quality of the mind of meditation. Okay? It's not stuck in samadhi. It's moving in samadhi. It's equanimous. It's peaceful. And it's active. So those are my reflections.